pain, no gain, I treat them the same. If it ain't my strain, it ain't in my brain. The boss, the man, nothing in between. Them niggas be gone as soon as they came. My car go fast, wash it in the rain. My chain is cold, diamonds in my rings. I get respect not because of fame. You hate, you lame, I don't entertain. My shoes, my fit cost a little change. She was your chick, now she with the gang. Just rolled the zip, now I need a flame. Well known, it don't gotta be explained.
What's up, what's up, what's good with it, everybody? We are back again for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast. That you might hear a little pep in my voice. That yeah, my Blue Devils might have gotten lucky, but it doesn't matter. We're still playing. Sam, what's up?
Man, what's good, world? And I might be a little tad bit different than you. It took me a whole 24 hours to process that damn game, man.
We're gonna get to that a little later, man. We're definitely gonna talk that. We're gonna talk the tournament as a whole, but let's start with the NBA, man. This is actually a topic that we left off of the episode last week, so we can go ahead and open up with that. What we did was a fan poll of ultimate starting five. So what happened was me and Sam decided to sit down and create our ultimate starting five in fantasy draft style. So he made a pick, I made a pick, and vice versa until we got to our entire starting five. So Sam's team was, with his first pick, he took Jordan, followed by Steph. Then he took, I believe, Bron, then Bird, then Olajuwon. That rounded out his five. So Steph, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, LeBron, and the Dream. My starting five was, of course, come on, man. Y'all know who I took with number one. I took the Mamba. So my starting five was Magic at my one, Kobe at my two, KD at my three, Karl Malone at my four, and the Diesel at my five. So I thought I had the better team here, but apparently our listeners thought otherwise. Sam's, we did a Who Squad would come out on top, and it was close, but Sam's team won by a margin of 53% to 47%. Now, let's dissect this a little bit, man. Sam, do you honestly believe that five would handle mine?
I absolutely believe that, and I believe that because my floor is just going to be so spaced out. What are you going to do? Because we're going to have Karl Malone on the island all night with Mr. James.
No, you're not, because Karl Malone isn't going to guard LeBron. Karl Malone is going to guard Larry Legend. And we're not going to act like Karl couldn't move. Karl was agile. Karl was super athletic in his time, in his prime. So I'm not worried about him getting cooked. And the question is, who are you going to throw Larry Legend on, for one?
It's not about defense. We not going to win with defense. We about to outshoot you and just beat you on the offensive end.
Not happening.
I built my squad. Why you think I picked Steph?
It's not happening, for one, because if y'all miss, y'all not getting no second chances. My team is controlling the boards. We're way too big. So you better hit the
too
first
big?
Shot.
You bet.
The Diesel?
Okay.
Karl Malone?
Okay. Do you not remember what Shaq said about Hakeem Olajuwon when he used to try bully Olajuwon?
Do you remember that this was the Shaq of the Magic that you're talking about? We're talking about prime here. The Dream can't do nothing with the prime Shaq. Nah,
yeah,
no.
We're fine.
But like you said,
the court is spaced out. Oh, you got to come out and guard all five of mine.
No, we don't. The Dream not hitting no three.
He ain't hitting the three, but he can hit the midi. Shaq can't chill in the paint.
He don't need to chill in the paint. But I think people forget how athletic Shaq was. Now, we're not talking about the super out of shape Shaq. We're talking about the Shaq that won the first ring with the Lakers.
Okay.
That prime time Shaq. That Shaq was running a floor like a gazelle.
Yeah, but do you trust him in the pick and roll situation with a Jordan or a Steph Curry? Hell no.
Exactly. It's not necessarily a trust thing. I think any other guys are susceptible to a pick and roll.
Exactly.
But even with that being said, Shaq will hold his own because Steph is going to have to shoot. He's not running around. He's not going around the
defense. Oh, Shaq?
He's not going.
Next topic.
He's not going around. Well, no, not that next topic, because we got to figure out how you're going to stop my guys.
Like I said, we're not going to win the game on offense. I mean, on defense, bro.
So you're basically banking on y'all having a perfect shooting night. That's what you're banking
perfect.
On.
Not perfect. We're going to have the better shooting night. While y'all hitting twos and KD hitting a couple threes, we slapping threes everywhere. And Jordan going to get
y'all
us
not
a
slapping threes everywhere for
yeah,
one.
Yeah, we are.
Steph and Bird. Will slap threes.
And LeBron.
LeBron's not slapping threes. He'll hit threes.
He's a 40% three-point shooter now.
That's because
he has been for like the past 6 years.
That's because he didn't take as many, bro. We're talking about – you're taking percentage into account with the guy who doesn't even take as many three-pointers as these other guys. I'm not saying LeBron can't hit the three, but LeBron is not – he's not somebody we worried about on the three-point line by no means.
I'm going to tell you how we're going to cancel that argument right now, man. How we gonna cancel the argument right now is Larry Bird only hit like 300 threes in his whole career. We know that he's a great shooter, regardless of how many threes he was taking. That doesn't make a difference. LeBron can shoot the basketball.
So are we gonna completely act like the three ball was that important back then? Because it wasn't.
I know it wasn't, but I'm just saying that's why you can't say how many threes they shoot it matters, because they really don't, bro.
Man,
and
like
LeBron
I said,
plenty of threes. He's a good shooter now.
Like
man.
I said, he's grown. He's definitely grown over his career. But I'm still living. I'm not getting beat by LeBron shooting the threes. That's not happening.
That's not all you getting beat by. You're getting beat because you can't help because we
the
got
court
one.
Isn't that space though, because we're
yes,
not we're
is.
Not
you gotta come out and guard everybody.
We are not sprinting out at LeBron on a 3-point
well,
shot.
He's gonna light you up. That's your fault. You
man,
I don't
no.
know what LeBron you've been watching. Well, maybe you watching Laker LeBron.
Bron not about to go super crazy from the 3-point line, but even with that being said, even with that being said. Steph, he doesn't match up at all with Magic, so with that's completely out of the question.
Act like Magic's this prolific scorer now, okay?
Magic is damn sure going to be prolific against a Steph. If Steph is lined up against a Magic Johnson, you're damn right he's going to be a prolific scorer.
Not buying it.
No, you tripping now. Yeah, you definitely. That's
clearly
definitely some favoritism out
clearly
there.
Clearly, the listeners weren't buying it either. I mean, we got the evidence. This ain't just blasphemy I'm talking here.
I'm not saying that my team will wash yours, but I'm saying there's a lot of matchups that I'm liking out there. I'm damn sure liking the Magic and Steph matchup. I'm damn sure liking the KD and Bird matchup. And I'm not loving the Shaq and Dream matchup, but I like it. As far as the other two, I love them. But I like the primetime Shaq against the Dream.
So but, where are you putting a Karl Malone on offense when you got a Shaq? Where's Malone's place in this offense? Was he just chilling in the corner?
No, he's not chilling in the corner, but Malone can shoot the ball. He don't have to shoot the three. The court is going to be spaced enough to where he can shoot. And you tripping if you think that he can't.
So what you doing with Magic then? Where Magic operate? How is he taking advantage of this Steph matchup?
It depends on who's getting the bucks right now. If Shaq doesn't look like a favorable matchup right then, basically my squad has a whole bunch of versatility. If Shaq's Shaq doesn't look like he's getting the best of the Dream, then that's when we putting Steph's little ass in the post.
That's all
and
you
we know
got
that's
is a bunch
certified
of post
bucket. Okay.
I got everybody as a threat in the same possession. You got one person as a threat every possession.
No.
Everybody on my possession's a threat every time down. Meanwhile, you run in the post for Shaq this time. The next time down, you run in the post for KD.
I don't need to put KD in a post. KD is going to size Bird up and do what he wants to do to Bird.
Man, look, we got more threats on the floor at a time, man. And my team fits together as a team. You just got a lot of good players playing together.
Yeah, man, save it.
I got the most unselfish superstar point guard ever running my one.
The most unselfish?
A guy that could get
man,
you 30.
Man, tripping now. You definitely tripping.
What do you mean? A guy that could
the most unselfish point guard?
Yes.
He's more. What? Bro, what are you talking about? talking about?
Name me another point guard that could average 30.
That's not unselfish then. What are you talking about? We're not talking about him scoring. You said the most unselfish point guard.
You ain't let me finish. You ain't let me finish. He could average 30.
No, that's not what you said. I wasn't done.
You stopped me.
You went on to another player.
But he's letting another guy take the front seat, bro. That's unselfish. He's willing to make other guys happy and take the back seat. That's key on a team where you got all stars. That's undervalued. That's what I'm saying. You got a bunch of stars on your team, but you got a whole bunch of Mamba mentalities. It's not going to work, bro. Kobe and Shaq couldn't even work together, and it was just them. How you going to throw KD and Magic in the fold too, man?
Because they don't got that mindset. KD and Magic do not have that mindset. As long as KD played with a guy like Russ, you going to say he got Mamba mentality and then turn around and went to a team that had back-to-back MVP winner, and you going to say that he's got Mamba mentality? No, bro.
We got the better.
Karl Malone also played alongside the second best point guard of all time in John Stockton. So you can't say that he's got a chip on his shoulder to feel like, oh, it ain't nobody out here to share the ball.
Did Karl Malone work with Kobe and Shaq when they played? Did that work?
He was fucking 40. What are you talking about?
But look at how the offense was, though. Regardless of how old he was, bro, the floor was just – it was just nasty.
And yet they still made it all the way to the finals, bro. Come on, dog. Relax. It had nothing to do with the spacing on the court. It had everything to do with Kobe and Shaq's feud. But that's neither here nor there. Our listeners sided with you. I just seem to feel like, you know, it could have went in the other direction. But I'm not mad at them for picking you because I see exactly why. If you got Jordan on the court, I mean, it's kind of hard to not pick that squad. And like you said, you did couple him with some other guys. I ain't going to knock you like your team garbage because you got some stuff out there.
All shooting, all scoring.
You got some stuff out there. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to the blacktop here a little later and put those fives out there against each other and see who comes out on top. I will. I definitely will. But let's jump to our next topic, man. It's something that I didn't want to talk about because – man, it really made me sick to my stomach watching it, man. Did you see the Nurkic injury?
Yeah, but as a hooper, man, I just don't see how you could watch that shit over and over again.
I couldn't. I watched it the first time, and I was like, nah, I don't even want to see it. Because I caught it on like in fast motion. I didn't have to slow it down. I actually caught it first time I watched it. I'm like, nah. Then I saw everybody running away, too. I'm like, I'm not even watching it again. I don't want to see what his leg looks like afterwards because I saw what it looked like during the play. And that shit, man, prayers out for him. I hope that he has a speedy recovery. But this is yet another year where the Trailblazers are having to go into the playoffs without Nurkic. Last couple years, he's been not at 100%. There's been games where he hasn't played. Now they don't have him at all heading into the playoffs. And right now they are the fourth seed in the West, I believe they are. How does this affect them moving forward? Do you think that this is pretty much wrapping it up for them? They're no longer a legitimate contender?
I don't want to say it's going to wrap it up for them because I never really had high hopes for them anyway. I feel like it definitely hurts their chances even more, I guess, but I mean, I never really felt like they was a big threat to the throne for the West anyway. So I'm not thinking that it's changing the landscape of the West or nothing like that.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. Like you said, they weren't really a team that was on my radar as far as a team that could challenge Golden State. As far as coming out of the West or even making it to the Western Conference Finals, but right now, like I said, they're seated at fourth, and I believe the Jazz are at five. But the Jazz are – who else is somebody right behind the Jazz that's like neck and neck? Yeah, the Clippers. They got the same record right now, but I believe the Clippers lost the tiebreaker. Yep. So it'll be if it pans out and the playoffs are actually the way that they are now, if playoffs were to start today, it would be the Jazz and the Trailblazers in the first round. And – with the Nurkic on the court, I'm taking the Trailblazers. Now I'm not so sure. I think that you may still be able to go in that direction, but it makes it a lot more difficult. So I think not having Nurkic takes them from a, I guess, a favorable first round win or a favorable second round appearance to a team that may not make it out of the first round of the playoffs. And it's sad to say because they've got a decent little culture down there. Like, it seems like they build up that team enough to where they're getting better every year. But come playoff time, something always seems to happen to take them a step back. And I don't know, it kind of makes you wonder, how long are they just going to be where they are before they start to lose, like, players that are actually coming there or players that they have, like a Dame Lillard? How long does he stay there? Or CJ McCollum? How long do they stay before they get tired of just being middle of the barrel?
I think that they'll give it one more year after this. But I think next year you'll start hearing trade rumors, though. I think next year you'll start hearing rumblings of McCollum and Lillard possibly being on the block, kind of like how we did with the Wizards. Like, they may not move them,
but they're going to put it out there.
We're going to start hearing it because where they are, it's fine and dandy to be winning 45, 50 games a year and whatnot, but it's the worst place to be in the NBA. Like, you don't want to be in the middle of the pack where you good enough to make the playoffs and win a series or two, but you ain't bad enough to get a good lottery pick. It's just not a good spot to be. You either want to be real good or real bad in the league, honestly. Because when you're real bad, you got a chance. You got a way better chance to get better
through
the draft. And when you're sitting in the middle of the pack, if you're not developing your talent, it's just like you just stagnant. It's hard to break out of that. It's really hard.
Not to mention, it's a middle of the pack team that's the Trailblazers, and the Trailblazers haven't been appealing in free agency either. So it's kind of hard to, like you said, get better if you can't get better in I guess the draft aspect or free agency aspect. It's kind of like you said, you're stagnant. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, I would definitely I wouldn't be surprised to see those rumblings of trade rumors occur and things of that nature. But let's talk about another team in that Western Conference, man. It's the Denver Nuggets, man. They've been pretty surprising as far as, I guess, how high they've been throughout the West throughout the year. I feel like they've got a really good roster, but I'd be lying if I said that I wasn't surprised at them being as high as they are. Do you think that the Nuggets are really as dangerous as they appear to be in the standings heading into playoffs?
I think they're dangerous to everybody in the West except Golden State. I think they will take the Rockets to 7. I think the Rockets would beat them, though, just because the Nuggets, they don't have that perimeter guy that they know for a fact they could go to down the stretch. I think that could be their only problem. Now, if Jokic shows that he's that guy that could get a bucket down the stretch, then it don't matter. But normally that's a perimeter guy. I'm not saying that it can't be a post guy. I mean, it can. But I don't know. It remains to be seen who that guy's going to be for the Nuggets. So it's kind of hard to say that I could see them knocking off the Warriors. And probably not the Rockets either.
I definitely don't see them knocking off the Warriors. But as far as the Rockets, that's an interesting matchup. But like you said, coming down the stretch is going to be difficult. And Jokic is, I guess, someone that you wouldn't mind putting the ball in their hands of in crunch time. But on the flip side, you also have to think that he's got a guy like Clint Capella that's guarding him. And if they do decide to double team, where is his immediate option to go to after that? Because it's easier to double team a post guy than it is a perimeter guy.
Definitely.
So down the stretch, you better believe that's what's going to come. And if that does happen, I mean, I don't know. I like the Nuggets moving forward. Like, I like their youth. I like what they have. I like what they will be in the next couple years if they keep this talent intact. But, I'm not too sold on them as far as the playoffs are concerned. I wouldn't be surprised to see them, like you said, get upset prior to them even getting to see Golden State, whether it be the Rockets or someone else. I think the Rockets will probably be the the only team that I could say definitively that would beat them. Anybody else is a toss up, and I would still side with the Nuggets. But I'm definitely a big fan of Jokic, most definitely. I also like Jamal Murray. I would just like him to become more consistent. But like I said, I like what they have down there. And there's a guy that we're actually going to talk about next, and I wouldn't be too against seeing him go down there, because that way they would actually have a true perimeter threat. And I don't know. I would like to see them do something to where they get that big-time star player to couple with a Jokic, because Jokic is a unique talent. He's not somebody that demands the ball because of his unique skill set. The way that he passes the ball and his basketball IQ is so high to where you don't have to force feed him the ball. And him playing alongside another star, a budding star, would be great for him, I feel like. It would definitely help take some of the load off of him. And I don't know. I would like to see that, but the player that I'm referring to is none other than Devin Booker, who just poured in at 59 points. And I mean, it's almost to the point where when he does stuff like this, it's not necessarily surprising, seeing as he had that, what was it, 71 last year or the year before last? Like, it's not too surprising to see him do stuff like this, but it does kind of get kind of boring, because it's like, he's having these outrageous games, but he's losing. Like, he's not winning. So, I guess, do you think that, you know, with the talent that he has, the skill set that he has, do you think that he may be, or do you think that it would be more beneficial for him to take a page out of the Anthony Davis notebook as far as, I guess, where he's headed with his career? Because this is yet another year that the Suns will be headed to the lottery. He's been playing his butt off. This year will probably be one of the – this year and last year he played a significant amount of time. Prior to that, he had been injured a lot. But I would say this year he's actually shown that, you know, he's durable for the most part. And with them heading to the lottery, it's almost like, how many more years is he going to sit around and allow this to happen before he actually does what Anthony Davis did? Like, all right, I've been here long enough. Either get some around me or it's time to go. How much more time do you think that he has, or do you think that it's beneficial for him to just go ahead and stab out?
I mean, I feel like it's too early. He's still under his first rookie deal, ain't he?
Yeah, he's still under that.
Yeah, it's too early.
It's only been in the league, what, 3 years?
No, he's been
4.
4 or 5. I think this might be his 4th or 5th year, something like that. But still, it's too soon for him to be whining. And I'm not saying he is, but it's just too soon. He got to find out a way to affect wins before he start whining about winning. Because I feel like he ain't won 20 games since he been there. I mean, not saying you got to go out there and carry the team to 40 or 50 wins or whatever, but I mean,
make it look respectable
or show some type of growth. Like, you still, y'all in the lottery every year. It's like, I don't know. I mean, your stats is there, but then clearly it's not the stats that's needed. You got to learn some leadership traits or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how you score 59 and you lose by 30.
That's exactly what I was alluding to. This is the second time that he's had a crazy scoring outburst with a loss. Like, it's something that's not going on with him. That, I mean, like you said, translate into a win.
It's not a big deal to go crazy and lose. That happens. But I just don't understand how you drop 60 points and you
and get beat that badly.
Like, yeah, like, does it, like, are your teammates not even ignited by this? Like, what's going on? Like, there's something going on. Like, there's no way that you're putting up 26 a night now, and we've been seeing you balling since you got in the league, but we see you win teenage games every year. You're a teenager and wins every season. Like, you got, I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying win 40, 50 games, but man, like, your team's not getting no better.
I might not be against seeing him go to the Eastern Conference, somewhere in the East, to see, I guess, just how much he can affect a team as far as winning games. I will give him that it's much more difficult to do so in the West. It's definitely loaded out there. I mean, we're seeing firsthand that a guy in LeBron James who's been to the finals, what, 8 straight years, not even making the playoffs this year in his first year in the West. Granted, it's not the same situation, but even with that being said, it does show that it's a lot more difficult to win games in the West. So he's been there his entire career, which hasn't been that long, but I would say that this year was probably the best roster that he's had since he's been there. And it didn't prove to be a difference maker at all. I mean, they just had the number one overall pick in DeAndre Ayton. They also had a guy in Josh Jackson that they drafted in the lottery last year. Also Devin Booker. And it just doesn't seem like anything. What more can you do? Like, who do you go out and draft this year that puts you in a better position than what you're in now?
Because my comparison to the Suns is the Kings. I feel like they was right around the same a couple years ago.
And the Kings are taking a step.
Yeah, exactly. There's something missing, and the Kings don't even have a talent like a Devin Booker.
Shit, you look at teams like the Clippers too. It's teams that don't have star-studded rosters.
The Clippers ain't a young team. I'm comparing them. Like, I feel like the Kings and the Suns are like similar in the way their rosters are compiled.
Yeah, I can see that. Young, Timberwolves too.
Like young teams, but you know what I'm saying? Like the Suns should be better, especially considering they're a bad team with who a lot of people would consider a future superstar. So like, where are the wins? Like, what's going on? I mean, we can't just sit here and just blame it on the roster when we see other young teams winning with less. Yeah. I mean, is it coaching? I mean, they just got another new coach, right?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's probably coaching more than anything. But even with that being said, I think even a mediocre coach could get more wins than what they got this year. It's almost like they're purposely tanking to try to do what the Sixers did or some shit like that. But it's just I just don't know, man. I don't know what more you can do as far as front office outside of hiring a new coach. Man. But what more can you do to get you in a better position?
Maybe Devin Booker need to be starting to drag players to the gym with him. Like, shit, you getting better. Maybe you need to get the rest of these guys better, too. You need to start taking them with you to the gym. Or something got to be done. I feel like Devin Booker should be at about 30 wins a season by now, as good as he is and the numbers he's putting up. He got to start stringing something together. This is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I think it may be that leadership, like you said. The more that I think about it, the more that seems to be what it is. Because I just can't think of anything else. And like you said, it's kind of odd to see somebody have as much individual success as he has. And I don't know, like the team not necessarily getting elated about it or not drawing any fire from it. There's nothing positive coming from his outbursts. I just don't see it. I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how he can continue to do things like he's doing.
Bro, and how do you drop 59 and lose by 30?
Yeah, that's baffling to me. I don't understand it at all. I just
that means your teammates were just out there like,
shit, here, shoot it.
Whatever, just leave, bro. That's what you're gonna do anyway.
Right. Like,
so, bro, that was just crazy, bro. That is just nuts. When I seen that he had 59, I was like, wow. And I looked at the score again, like, hold up. Like, what? And by the Wizards, I mean, by the Jazz, too. I mean, I said the Jazz trash, but goodness gracious.
You're getting your head. You shouldn't be getting your head whooped by the Jazz like that if your star player just went for 59. I bet you if the Rockets have a game where don't nobody else do nothing and James Harden still go for 59, I bet you would go to the wire.
Exactly. And Devin Booker in the game against the Jazz, best player on the floor, right?
Yeah, I would say so.
Me too. I mean, I would take him over
Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I would take him over Donovan Mitchell. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Like I said, it's too early for him to be asking out. He's still under his first rookie deal. It's over for that. Even if he do ask out, that he's not going nowhere.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that they would even bat an eye if he came out and made a statement like Anthony Davis. But, yeah, man, I don't know. I'm excited. Well, not excited. I'm more anxious to see.
Me too. I want to see it in the playoffs.
Right. Man. I'm more anxious to see what's going to happen within these next couple years to come. Like, when – I'm anxious to see when is going to be that time to where we actually get to see how good Devin Booker really is. Because it's hard to gauge when you're in the lottery every year. You can go out and have your crazy numbers, but like you said, if you're not affecting wins or you don't have many win shares, then what does that really mean? It don't mean nothing. You can go out here and pad your stats all you want to, but, I mean – are we really going to look at you like, shit, Devin Booker really a star? He a superstar. No.
Because the thing you got to look at is, regardless of how good a player is on a bad team, those teams still play games. Somebody has to score on those teams.
Exactly.
So not saying Devin Booker is, but if the Suns was a team full of scrubs, somebody on that team still going to average about 20.
Mm-hmm.
They playing 48 minutes a night. Somebody's going to have the stats. Somebody got to get the stats. That's why it's hard to tell when a bad team, when somebody's really good.
Now, I will say in this 59-point game that he had, he was the only player on their roster in double figures. So, like you said, was it a matter of teammates just saying, here, shoot the ball, that's what you're going to do anyway? Or was it a matter of guys that really aren't that good? I mean – I find it hard to believe that nobody else on that team can score. I don't know. It's hard to gauge because it's like part of me wants to look at it like, shit, maybe the team really don't fuck with Devin Booker like that. Maybe he out there getting his and they like, shit, I don't really give a fuck. He can go ahead and get his own if he want to. I don't care. Like, they don't care that much. They're not with him. Like, if he go out there and go off like, shit, look, man, let's go. Let's get this dub then. If you coming out here like this tonight, we about to get this dub. That's how a genuine teammate would feel,
That's what I'm saying. Because I'm thinking to, like, when Steph dropped 50 in the Garden or whatever, there was a game without David Lee. So we were shorthanded. And Steph went crazy, and the game still went to the wire. That was with the Melos and Knicks team. And the team was just – they just was rallying around that energy of Steph just hitting everything he was throwing up. So the team was playing extra hard on defense, doing everything else they could, you know what I'm saying, just to keep the team in the game. And that's normally what you would see when the guy is going crazy like that. So me personally, when I look at I didn't watch the game, and I haven't seen any highlights. But when
That's exactly what I was about to say.
When I look at the box score, I see, like, what I think of is just guys just like, shit, that's all he gonna do is shoot. Shit, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, I'm
just another night at the office. Like, that's how I see.
I'm gonna have to rewatch the highlights. I did watch a few clips. I didn't watch it in its entirety as far as the whole 59, but I do want to watch it and watch the mannerisms of teammates, because And games like that, when you got somebody going super crazy like that, you'll see it in your team, whether or not they're with you or not. And I really want to look back at it and see that, because it's just I just don't know, man. I feel like there are a lot of things that Devin Booker could work on. Mostly, like you said, definitely the leadership aspect. But even beyond that, I would like to see Devin Booker. We've seen you fill it up. We know you can score. Take a step in another direction and show us you can defend too. Show us you can do something else other than score. And I feel like maybe then you will start to get some respect from your teammates, because he's I've seen a lot of possessions where he's looked a lot like James Harden, like defensively.
I'm going to go ahead. This is the last thing I got to say about Devin Booker, and this, you brought it to my attention, made me remember it when you said defense about him. I seen a couple people talking about he better than Klay Thompson.
What?
Yeah, I seen that a couple times on
that. Man, no.
And yeah, that's why he's not, is because he's not a two way player. Klay's not just the guy that can get you 59. He can also stop.
He's not even in a two way player conversation. Like, he's all offense. Man, yeah, niggas is tripping if they said that.
Yeah. I swear I seen it.
Well, that's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. And that we'll end it on that note. Let's go to college basketball, man. This is where we actually get to talk about our Blue Devils, man. This game against UCF, it was hard to watch, man. It was very hard to watch. It messed with me a little bit. I was probably more engaged in this game than I had been all year, even throughout the Carolina games. I was extremely hype at moments, extremely pissed at moments. It just, I don't know, it was hard for me to deal with. So, first question, were we the better team, or were we just lucky against UCF?
No, we got flat out lucky. It ain't even no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We were flat out lucky. We're lucky to still be playing. I don't really take any joy in saying this, but I told you that shooting was going to be a huge issue for us in this tournament. Like, how in the hell do you end up at Duke playing point guard and they can put their center on you and stand in the middle of the lane all night? That is just like, I feel like Coach K, oh man, bro, it's time. Oh man, it was
hard to watch because. Yes. I don't feel like Trey Jones is that bad of a shooter to where he actually can be guarded by a center and be guarded 10 feet away. I think that it was a mental thing. I think that he missed a couple early, and then the fact that they put their center on him fucked with him mentally too. Like, shit, they just put their center on me, and I ain't hitting shit. Like, he didn't look like himself, because you've seen a Trey Jones when teams play off of him. Trey Jones sometimes is comfortable to where he'll take a dribble in and pull up mid-range because that's where he's comfortable at. He didn't do any of that. So I think that shooting will be our issue, as you've said multiple times, but I think this game was a lot different than many other games we'll have to play in as far as personnel, mostly because this is a team to where Duke as a ball club, we offensive rebound extremely well, like better than most teams in the country. And that's why I'm not too nervous about our shooting woes, because we've had games where we shot the ball god awful and we still came out on top, so, simply because we're athletic enough to offensive rebound and stick it back. But when you're playing against a team that has a 7'6" guy who's staying in the paint the entire game, yeah, this is exactly what you're gonna get. And I'm thankful that we don't have to play another team with height like that, at least not yet.
But now we're playing a team that you need shooting for another reason.
Agreed.
Is because Virginia Tech, you need threes against them because they're gonna hit a whole busload of them against you. So, God, I wanted Liberty to win that damn game, bro. Bro, I do not want to play Virginia Tech, bro. I got a bad feeling about this one, bro.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little nervous. I'm always nervous when we see other ACC teams in the 64. I'm always nervous about that because this is not just a typical team who's just preparing for Duke. This is a team who's gotten to prepare for Duke multiple times throughout the year. And this is a really good Virginia Tech team. This is a better Virginia Tech team than I've seen within the last couple years. And
they got the guy back.
Yeah, they got Justin Robinson back, I believe is his name. And they got him coming off the pine right now. So I feel like this is probably going to be the game to where he feels like he's got something to prove. Blackshear, I like him too, though.
Special. Oh my gosh, man. This game make me real nervous. And then looking ahead, even if we do win, I hope LSU lose if we win, because then that's another team
that
shoot the damn lights out. Like, goodness. But if we defend like we supposed to, we shouldn't have no problem.
That's the thing, though. We're a good defensive ball club. I feel like we'll be fine against these teams. Last week was just a very difficult team to match up against if you're not going to shoot the ball well. That's in order to beat UCF, you have to shoot the ball well, because they're going to grab just about every rebound off the, like, everything that comes off the rim, they're going to grab. There were a lot of instances where when Taco wasn't in the game, our team looked a lot better. I mean, we flowed. That's just what it was. We looked how we were supposed to look as far as rebounding the ball, sticking stuff back, attacking the basket. That's Duke basketball this year. And I feel like that's why that game was so much closer than what it was, because of Taco's effect on the game. And you couple his, I guess, his size with the fact that there were a few missed calls, along with the fact that guys weren't playing with confidence. That whole, you throw that in a bowl, that's the recipe for an upset. So I'll definitely go out and say we got lucky as well. Johnny Dawkins' son is a baller.
Yeah, or either that, or he got up for that game.
One of the two. Because yeah. I haven't watched UCF this year at all. So
me either.
But apparently he's a baller, because prior to the game, before the game started, the analysts said it. They said Aubrey Dawkins, he's a pretty good ball player, but apparently he's really that deal if he's as good as he looked against Duke. But do you think that, I guess, I mean, you've already said you believe our shooting woes will be an issue, but do you think that will prevent us from winning the championship? Do you think that they're detrimental enough for us to not win the championship? Or do you think we're good enough to win it even having shooting woes?
I think we can still win the championship, yes, definitely. But it's going to have to come through our defense and getting out on the break, which we didn't do very much of. Sunday. We didn't do it very much of that on Sunday. And then, because we're not a good half-court offensive team. We're just not. I mean, it is what it is. We're not a good offensive team, half-court. Because, I mean, we playing two guards that can't shoot at all. I feel like I could take both they bread shooting. Like, they can't shoot worth a lick. It's crazy. They did get a couple ones to go down
a piece, like total
at opportune times, though. They went down at good times that we needed them to go down, but still, they're not getting off the hook for that. I don't feel like I'm a guy, since I played basketball, I don't know if I'm biased because I was a shooter or what. I feel like, personally, if you play the guard, I don't understand how. I mean, I'm not saying you got to be wet, but they shouldn't be able to play you inside the lane. I just don't understand that. I just don't get it, especially considering I feel like every high school got a shooting machine now. So I don't feel like it's no excuse for you to not be able to hit a jumper at all.
Yeah, I agree to a certain extent. I think that in today's NBA, it's much more prevalent for you to be able to shoot the ball because of the way that the game is set up. I think that if you would have asked me this with one particular player not in my mind as far as skill set is concerned, if I can take Rajon Rondo out of my head and not envision what he has done in the NBA – I would probably tell you that it would be nearly impossible to be successful without having a jump shot. He's the exception to the rule, mostly because of how crafty he is and how he can get to the cup and get his
basketball IQ.
Yeah, his basketball IQ as well. Yeah, but I think that Trey Jones has a fairly high basketball IQ, especially for someone his age.
But Rondo's ain't fairly high. Rondo is a basketball genius.
Yeah, he's
up there with Bron and them.
I agree, but we don't know if he was always that guy, especially his freshman year at Kentucky.
That's true.
He was good. I will give him the fact that he was a stellar basketball mind at his age. But like I said, I feel that Trey Jones is as well. So it's more of, I guess, how he's going to approach the game from here on out. Now that you've actually seen a team do to you, what could be your worst, worst nightmare as far as putting a center on you and you shooting the ball god-awful? Now is where your basketball IQ comes in. Next game, if you run into this same situation, now I need to see you attack it differently. I need to see how you adjust to what you've been shown.
His mid-range is nice. You need to get exactly. To the elbow.
But I was telling, I was talking to my wife about this game, and I said I think he was a little intimidated because, like I said, I've seen multiple instances where guys have played off of him. And he didn't take that three. He took a couple dribbles in and pulled up mid-range. I think that he didn't know how to judge Taco's length. I think it was more of Taco played off of him, but I don't think he thought that he had enough space to where he could actually dribble in and pull up and get to the mid-range. But to me, as a, I guess as a fan of the game and being around guys like you who are crafty with the ball, that's when you get to play a little bit. You get up into that space. Make him guard you. Get up into that space. Make it look like you're going to shoot. Make him come out there. Oh, got him. Go around him. Hit him with a hezzy. Hit him with something to where you are more effective than a guy that's just standing still shooting the ball. I've always been the type of person who enjoyed watching guys who can't shoot still have extreme confidence on a court. You can try to make them shoot, but you don't have to shoot the ball. Attack the person that's guarding you. You can still dribble toward that person and make them defend you without you having to shoot a three. You shouldn't have to make two threes in order for them to be like, okay, now I got to go out here and check them. Now get into your comfortable spots, get to where you're comfortable at on the court and make other things happen. That's what I need to see from Trey Jones moving forward.
Last thing about Duke before we got to move on before, you know, we can't talk about Blue Devils too long.
Right.
Is, I think that if we're going to win, another thing Coach K needs to do is go away from that
backcourt.
Nah, that open opportunity offense, man. I know it's like that's how we run our offense. We've always run our offense like that as long as – like since J.J. been there. Like I feel like J.J. was the last time we really ran our offense through somebody. And, like – I think it's time for him to really.
No, we did it with Singler a little bit.
Nah, but it's always an open opportunity offense, though. It's just like he'll run. It's like little certain cuts that you could and sets you could run out of it. But it's really like, I don't know. It's hard to explain. We ran it in AAU, though. Like you basically read your defender, and that's how you cut off out of that.
Yeah,
out of the offense or whatever. It's not nothing really set in stone for it. But I think we got to run our offense through Zion, man. We got to. Like, that's the bread and butter. Once we start getting double teams on him, then I feel like that opens up everything. We can let RJ do his thing in the open court because you already know he's going to score 12 points off layups at least in the open court as long as we get stops. We got to run their offense through Zion. And too many other people are getting touches that don't need the ball.
I can agree. I can agree with that 100%. Also, another thing that I want to add is that I believe our next game will be getting Jack White back. So that'll also help us out a little bit too, especially if he comes out hitting the three like he had been ending off the season, because we desperately need that. We need that desperately. I'm actually surprised that Coach K decided not to put Alex O'Connell on the court at all.
That game was too big for him, man. I like O'Connell. You know I'm an O'Connell fan, but he showed me in that Carolina game that he's just not ready for the moments yet, and I got a quick question in the GOAT.
That's true. Because I did a lot of questioning it too. And I mean, yeah, like you said, he might not be ready. I mean, I wouldn't be against throwing a guy like Joey Baker in there either, because when he got his opportunity, he looked pretty good. And
he looked hungry. He looked like he ready to prove he belonged.
Exactly.
We're probably out there looking at Jack White like, man, I would have slapped that three.
Exactly.
Got me with this damn red shirt.
Exactly. And I feel like he might I don't know. We might see a Grayson effect out of him as far as if you throw him in the tourney right now. But I feel like that's enough, man. We're not gonna keep talking, Duke. All right. So, out of all of the teams that you watched in the first weekend, which team surprised you the most as far as I guess I don't
either
know.
Either way.
Yeah, either way, bad. Good or bad. We'll go good or bad.
Let's see, because it's been a little while. Let me think.
Well, why are you thinking? I'll go ahead and riddle my mouth.
Kansas.
For bad?
Yes. Oh. Oh, my God. Oh, and then I'm going to go ahead and flip it, and I'm going to say Auburn. Because I knew they was good. I mean, obviously, we played them this year. I knew they were good. But I didn't know they shot that chicken like that, bro.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They came out guns blazing. Like,
I like Auburn a lot, man.
Hey, if they come out like that, Carolina got their hands full, bro.
Hey, if you take a look at my bracket, I actually got Auburn upsetting Carolina. That's how high I am on Auburn, because this Carolina team is a good Carolina ball club.
They are, but I think Auburn is a tough matchup. They're one of them teams you don't want to see in the tournament with.
Agreed.
With all them guards, they can just all combo guards that can do all the same shit.
Agreed.
Some of them a little better than others, but it's just like they just come at you in waves, man. Them teams you don't want to fool with in the tournament, man. That's how Virginia Tech is, bro. That's what I'm saying. I'm nervous. Like, these are teams you don't want to see in the dance.
Yeah, I agree. As far as teams that impressed me, Auburn was definitely one of them, but it's more of I expected it from Auburn. I have two teams that impressed me a lot. I guess one was Houston. Houston, yes,
I forgot about them.
Houston looks good. Also, along with Houston is Purdue. Purdue has also looked really good. These are two teams that I'm like, ooh, I don't know. They got the right ingredients to upset some teams, and I think Tennessee's definitely on upset watch this upcoming weekend. Them and Purdue, and I mean Kentucky, Houston. I think that's going to be a good game. That's going to be a really good game.
I think we're in for a treat in this Sweet 16. I think we're going to get 8 bangers.
I agree. I think all of them are going to be good as well. I guess as far as teams that were disappointing to me, it's a little difficult. I guess off top, I got to go with Nevada. You said you made that clear that you ain't think that they was going to have another Cinderella run. I didn't necessarily believe one of my brackets. I did pick them to win it, but that was in my upset bracket. But
I told you it was more about their matchup for me. I knew that Florida was going to be a tough matchup for them.
Yeah, definitely them. Who else? A lot of people have been raving about Michigan State and that they should have been. They were the number one overall 2 seed. They should have been placed in a better bracket, this, and that. But they look a little shaky to me.
Man, you know, I'm never worried about no Michigan State, man.
Yeah, I'm not worried about them as a Duke fan, definitely not. But as far as a basketball fan, this isn't a team that I'm looking at like, oh.
I think LSU going to knock them off. I hope they don't, but I think they will.
I wouldn't be too surprised to see that either. Who else? I was Nova, but I was never really high on Nova to begin with. They didn't really look good to me. I think that's pretty much it for real. Everybody else was pretty much how I expected it to be.
When the last time we had a Sweet 16 that was basically chalk like this?
Yeah, it's been a long time. And I mean, it was Duke. The only teams that really that are surprises is like a Oregon, the 12th seed. Outside of that, everything else is pretty much.
I mean, we got some five over a 4.
Yeah, that's.
But I mean, that ain't no.
That's not much.
Nah, it's crazy. Everybody else is in that chicken. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, we got the East 1, 2, 3, 4. The West 1, 2, 3, 4, and the Midwest is 1, 2, 3, 5. And then we got 1, 2, 3, 12. So, yeah, this is definitely an interesting Sweet 16. Like you said, it's been a while since we had a chalk Sweet 16 like this. It's crazy.
That's why the games are going to be so good, because everybody who was supposed to be there made it.
Agreed. So as far as good games are concerned, which games are you looking forward to most this weekend? Which matchup, if you had to pick one or two, which matchups would you be salivating to watch?
Well, obviously, I'm not going to pick Duke, because that's a guarantee.
Yeah, we're definitely glued in on that one.
I'm gonna go with that Texas Tech and Michigan, man.
Yeah,
that's gonna be. I think that could be the game of the tournament. I think it got that type of potential. I think it's a perfect matchup.
Agreed. I was gonna go with that one. Let me think of another one. I guess I'll go Carolina Auburn. If Auburn comes out and plays the way that they have played throughout this tournament, I'm excited to see that game. Mostly because Carolina's been playing some good ball, and they've gotten some stellar performances out of Kobe White. He's really looked like he's ready to take a step. I'm actually excited to see him and Bryce Brown go at it a little bit. I think, that would probably be the one game that I would be focused on. But before we get off of college basketball, we got to talk, my guy. We got to talk Ja Morant. He basically showed what everybody thought he was. He's exactly what the NBA scouts and other guys who have been drooling about him. He's exactly what they thought he was. And I guess my question to you is he the NBA's next star point guard?
I mean, I don't know if I could say that, because I mean, point guards in the NBA are like
a stockpile right now.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to grace that
star, as
a point guard. But
last guy we've had come in and do it that early was probably who? Kyrie.
Yeah. And at that time, the point guard spot
wasn't loaded.
It was starting. All those guys was young. They all was just coming in at that time as well with Kyrie. So it's going to be tough for him to get there. Not saying he can't, but he definitely is going to be a special talent. Man, I see a lot of D Rose.
Ooh, I like that comparison.
I do. I think he could. That guy gonna be special.
Yeah,
that's who the Suns need to get.
I think he's gonna be special too, and I love the D Rose comparison. I've seen it a couple times, so I tried to go in a different direction. I actually went in the direction of guys who are no longer in the NBA. When I look at him, I see as far as skill set is concerned, I see a guy like a Baron Davis.
Ooh, yeah,
he can score the ball extremely well. But he can also dish that rock. And a lot of people don't know. Like, they look at B. Diddy as like, oh, he was a highlight type of guy. B. Diddy averaged like 7.6 assists or 7.2 assists for his career. So he was also a facilitator. And he played at the time where you couldn't really play point guard if you didn't at least dish the ball. Like, we are still looking for you to dish the ball, because you look at guys like an Allen Iverson, who played the shooting guard because he scored so well. He didn't even play point guard. He played the two. So guys like B. Diddy, who can fill it up, they also had to bring that assist ratio to the table. And if it wasn't for B. Diddy's injuries, I felt like we would talk about him in a completely different light than what we do. We look at B. Diddy as an underrated guy. We would look at him completely differently if it wasn't for injuries. Another guy that I see when I look at him, it's mostly because of the chip on his shoulder that he has. I feel like B. Diddy had that, but I feel like this next player that I'm going to compare him to had it even more, and he also brought that talent along with it, and that's Stephon Marbury. I think he reminds me a lot of Starberry, mostly because of that grit that he brings to the table. It's not necessarily like a cocky grit, but it's more like I know my talent. And I know what I'm capable of out here. I say Starberry mostly because Starberry was a lot like B. Diddy in the aspect that he could score, but he could also facilitate. Stephon Marbury actually averaged more assists than B. Diddy did, I believe. He was 7.6. But Starberry's issue was that he was said to be uncoachable. He had issues with multiple coaching staffs. And I don't see that. I don't see that at all when I look at John. He looks like a guy that's definitely coachable. He doesn't seem to be a guy who has a temper or an ego issue or anything like that. I think all signs point to him being a stellar NBA talent. If he can stay away from injuries, the sky's the limit for this guy. And even though, like you said, it is kind of early to try to, you know, throw that star label on him, when I look at him, I see star. It's written all over him. I think that, like I said, if he stays healthy, he will be the next great NBA or next star NBA point guard that we have coming through here. It won't be too many like him coming anytime soon, I don't believe. But, yeah, I've been saying how big of a fan I am, and this tournament didn't do nothing but further instill that. He's that guy, man, most definitely. So your comparison was Derrick Rose, right?
Yeah,
I like that. I think I like that a lot. And the thing that stands out more about that is that he can shoot the rock.
Yeah.
He can shoot the rock. D-Rose was a tad bit more athletic, and he was quicker. I feel like Ja's biggest thing is that he's very good at changing pace on the court. That's what makes him. Too. Yeah, he is. He is. I don't know.
What?
You mean height wise?
Yeah, he's taller.
Okay, yeah. I was about to say he's a little stick. I don't think D Rose was that thin when he came out, but yeah. I like his size, 6'3". He's a pretty nice size point guard. So yeah, I'm excited to see where he ends up. Like I said, my hot take was that my Lakers is going to draft him. I don't quite know how we're going to do it, but we're going to try to figure something out to where we get him in. We get him in that purple and gold.
Reach for the sky.
I can dream a little bit. Ain't nothing wrong with it. Before we get out of here, let's touch on a couple of NFL topics, man. Gronk retired. It wasn't necessarily surprising. I just felt like it would have been a little, he would have gave the Patriots a little more of a heads up about it. Like a lot of people have said, he's already had one foot out the door toward retirement anyway. But now that he's taken a full step toward it, it's like, what does this mean for the Patriots? Because they didn't have enough time to go out and try to find somebody to fill those shoes. What do you think that means for the Patriots? Is it that detrimental that they lost Gronk?
I mean, it'll hurt for a little while, but one thing we know about the Patriots is they'll be all right. As long as they got Brady and Belly, I wouldn't be worried. I mean, if I was a Patriots fan, I wouldn't be worried. I'd be like, I mean, you knew it had to happen sooner or later. And if you was watching any of these games this year, you had to feel like this was going to be the year it was going to happen.
Yeah, it was definitely coming. I think, like you said, I think if it were any other ball club, it's something to be worried about. But the fact that you got Belichick and Brady, you're not too worried. The only thing that you really look at is that now Brady doesn't have one of his safety outlets, one of his safety blankets. He still has Edelman. So he'll be fine in that aspect. But as far as having a guy like Gronk, that's a guy that you don't really got to do too much. Put the ball in his vicinity. He's going to go get it. Matchup nightmare. I'm excited to see how they adjust as far as not having Gronk. Because typically the Patriots have been a plug-in type of team. Doesn't really matter who they lose. They just plug somebody else in there and get production out of them. Not quite that simple with a guy like Gronk. So I would love to see how they move as far as trying to trying to add to that production. I was watching, I think it was Undisputed yesterday, they were talking about this. And the biggest takeaway that I took from them was that Gronk didn't give them much of a heads up about his retirement, because if he did, they would have went a little harder in free agency. They would have went after guys like trying to bring Amendola back, which they made a play at him, but they said he wanted too much money, so they fell back off of it. There was another player. I can't remember who it was. They went after somebody else and just fell back off of it, but didn't go at it. They had an opportunity to go after Jared Cook, which they didn't. They didn't pursue it. They had a mutual ground there where they both could have made something happen as far as Jared Cook's camp and the Patriots, but they didn't go through with that. So, like I said, I'm anxious to see how they plug that in. But last topic before we get out of here, there's actually a meeting going on within the next couple of days about this. Teams are now lobbying for a new onside kick rule. Now, for those who don't know, the onside kick has been changed a lot, with players not being able to do certain things on the kickoff, trying to make the kickoffs return safer. So last year, the statistics were there was a 21% completion rate when it came to onside kicks. 21.8% of the time there was a successful onside kick prior to last year. After the rule change, that dropped drastically from 21.8% to 7.4%. And I mean, as you can see, that's a huge drop off. So now the NFL and other teams are trying to figure out exactly what they can do to, I guess, make the games more interesting down the stretch. I actually like what they're trying to do. Just to give the listeners a little bit of a background, the rule that they're lobbying for is now, instead of a team kicking an onside kick, let's say my team is playing against Sam's team and my team scores, and instead of us setting up to kick an onside kick, we get the ball at our own 35-yard line. So that means we've got basically the entire field to go. We get one play. It's like it's equivalent to a 4th and 15. So you get one play from your 35-yard line. If you convert, then you continue your drive and you try to, you know, try to score. You don't get any additional timeouts. You don't get anything like that. You just get the ball and you try to pursue on with your drive. But if you do get the ball, or if you don't convert that 4th and 15, then the other team will just take over possession as from where they would from a set, what do you call it, a touchback. They will take over from there. I think that that's a pretty good idea. What's your take on that? Do you think that that could work?
Yeah, I think that'd be better, because I mean, the onside kick, I mean, like you said, we already know it's not going to get converted.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty much non-existent now. Like, it used to be back. Right. It used to be an exciting play. Like, oh shoot, they're about to kick an onside kick. I felt like that was last time I was excited about something like that was when I was a child. Like, that I was extremely young, and now that I know the game a lot more, I'm like, oh, they're about to kick an onside kick. This thing a wrap. Like, it's onside kicks are now starting to become Hail Marys.
Yep.
And as crazy as it sounds, Hail Marys are getting converted more than onside kicks are. So I think that this is a great idea. I think that it would be very beneficial. A lot of teams are also trying to lobby for a change with the overtime now. They're trying to change it to make it more like college football, to where both teams get a chance to to get the ball. I think that it should. I think more than anything, if I'm the commissioner and I'm thinking about making some changes, I would make that change solely for playoffs only. I think the playoffs should be the only one where you get multiple possessions. Because you look at somebody like the Chiefs this past year and the Patriots, you got two of the best quarterbacks in the game. You know, whoever gets the ball first is going to march their team down there and score. It just so happened that it was Tom Brady this year. Mm-hmm. So you got an MVP and Patrick Mahomes that don't even get an opportunity to win a game. I think that that's senseless in the playoffs. Regular season, you can leave it like it is because the games matter, but not quite that much. So if you decide to keep it what it is, regular season, I don't think anyone will be upset. It's the playoff games that they care about the most. Andy Reid seemed to be extremely upset that his quarterback didn't get an opportunity, and rightfully so. I would have been the same way. So I'm excited to see some changes be made as far as the NFL is concerned. I think that it's long overdue, especially for the onside kick. I'm definitely on board with that. But, yeah, man, that pretty much does it. Was there anything else you want to say to the people before we got out of here?
Nah, that's it.
All right, well, that pretty much wraps up the episode. I'm trying to think if there was something that I wanted to say. I felt like there was. All right, real quick, before we get out of here, you got the number two pick, R.J. Barrett, Ja Morant. Who you taking?
Who am I the GM for?
Good question. I'm trying to give you somebody neutral, because if we go somebody like the Suns, then obviously you're going to take R.J. Barrett because you got Devin Booker.
No, I'm taking Ja Morant with the Suns.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're not taking a guy like RJ because you got Devin Booker.
Yeah. I don't know. I just make it easy for you. Instead of having you pick a team, I'll just say I think between those two, it's based off of
what personnel.
It's based off what you already have and what you need. I don't think that either one of them is any better as far as like talent wise. Like, I don't think there's that big of a difference between the two to where you have to pick one over the other.
Yeah, that's true. I think more than anything, it's head and shoulders with Zion being the number one pick. But number two pick, I don't think that you can necessarily go wrong. Yeah, right now they got Phoenix with the second pick, Cleveland with the number three, and both of those can both of those picks can drastically change the culture, with Phoenix taking Ja Morant and Cleveland taking RJ Barrett. Yeah. I think both of those are great fits for both of those ball clubs. But yeah, man, that does it for another episode of the Pick and Roll Podcast, man. Y'all make sure y'all reach out to us on our social medias. Keep engaging with us. Let us know what y'all want to hear. And the offer does still stand that whoever comes out on top of this bracket, you do get the chance to come on to the episode, talk, debate, whatever you want to do with me and Sam, and you get to pick a topic. So, yeah, make sure y'all keep up with y'all's brackets, because right now it's not looking good for the kid. Not in that one, at least, because it's a whole bunch of people in there. And I'm good in the other one, but as far as the Pick and Roll Podcast, yeah, I'm kind of low on that one. So it's looking a lot like we're going to have us a special guest. Not sure who just yet, but yeah, man, that does it. Sign it out. It's your boy Ish.
And it's your boy Sam. We appreciate the love.
We out.